All right, remember, the machine knows if you're lying. First statement, Carvana will give you a real offer on your car all online.
False.
True, actually. Oh. You can sell your car in minutes.
False? That's gotta be...
True again. Carvana will pick up your car from your door, or you can drop it off at one of their car vending machines.
Sounds too good to be true, so true!
Finally caught on. Nice job. Honesty isn't just their policy, it's their entire model. Sell your car today, too.
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
Hey, everybody, it's Devin.
And Kate.
Welcome to some more weekly med crimes.
Yeah, baby.
I don't know when I'm going to stop calling it weekly med crimes.
How about never? Never's good. Never works
never
for me.
Never sounds fine.
Can we just say that all the time now? Like, this is great. This is fine. I'm in my element. I don't know about you, but I love this. This has been
awesome.
It's
a good plan for me.
Yeah.
I'm okay with it.
Yeah, this works. Happy fall. It's fall.
Yay.
It's fall now. So we're all really loving it. And,
except for I sweated my ass off at apple picking this last weekend. I mean.
Yeah, where did that heat wave come from?
I really don't know, but I mean, yikes.
Yikes. The boob sweat was boob sweating.
It was doing something.
Yep. That definitely happens. That definitely does happen. We, kick off this part two of Lane's Angels of Death, we have a couple of Patreons.
That's so crazy.
Must celebrate. We have a Sarah Jaikishin.
Hope
I'm saying that right. Hi, Sarah. We love you. Thank you so much for joining. And we have Katie. Beautiful name. Beautiful, beautiful name.
You're biased.
Katie.
But yes,
I'm a little biased. I actually wrote a little heart by the name right here. You can actually see it. It's a whole thing. Last but not least, we actually have a special Patreon shout out to do. And this
Patreon. Oh, that's
Patreon,
right. You told me.
I did, and I'm really excited about it. So Mira Logsetti. Mira, okay, lady, your boyfriend, Elliot, is like a real one, okay? He like messaged me on Instagram and on Patreon, and he just like pulled all the strings and he got you the shout out, baby. And you guys are endgame. So
Mira's freaking out right now.
Can we come to your wedding is my next question. Like,
hope. Also, while she's listening to this, that said boyfriend is right there next to her.
I hope. I am so excited for you guys. Mira Logsetti and your boyfriend, Elliot, you guys are the best. And thank you so, so, so much for your support. We really appreciate you.
I told Kate that this was like, hey, is this like considered our first cameo?
I know, right? If only, if only.
If only.
And we have a sweet creature for you guys. So you guys are the Melusine. A Melusine. Do you know what a Melusine is, Devin? Or a Melusine?
Do you think I know what a Melusine is?
So did you know that the Melusine is the lady depicted on the Starbucks logo? If you look at the Starbucks logo, the little green thing, that's a lady. That's a Melusine.
You mean it's not the Statue of Liberty?
Wait. Please don't.
No, I'm kidding.
Tell me.
That was sarcastic.
Thank God.
You're welcome.
I was about to chop you in the teeth.
Come on.
Okay. I mean, not actually, but like just with my energy, you know? So they're actually a half person, half fish, like similar to a mermaid. And it's a common misconception that the Starbucks lady is a mermaid, but it's not. It's a Melusine. And they have two fish tails instead of one. And they are ferocious. Like they'll kind of rip your face off a little bit. So, yeah, that's that. That's what you guys are. That you guys are all, you know, awesome two-tailed mermaids out there. Just vibing.
Yay.
Woo! And now we have part two of our
creepy
situation
people.
With our coven of terrible women who somehow found each other over in Austria. And this is part two of the Lane's Angels of Death. Welcome.
What?
So as just like a brief recap, I'll let you know where we left off. There are four women in this coven of weirdos. Irene Leadoff, who's a young married woman in a somewhat abusive relationship, at least allegedly. Mariah Gruber, who's a young single mom, working tons and tons of overtime. Stefania Meyer, an older divorcee from Yugoslavia, looking for kinship among colleagues. Actually, as I like, so as I'm going through this, it's like a sitcom and I'm just like, you know, giving everyone's little one-liner on like who they're at. You know who they are. Like,
these are the credits and the character, like, little.
And here's Ross Geller, the goofy paleontologist from. Yeah, exactly. That's what I feel like I'm doing.
And I'll be there for you
when the wind starts to blow.
No, these people are too horrible.
Yeah, they're the worst. Yeah, they're nothing like our friends from Friends. And then lastly, their leader, Waltraud Wagner, who's a nursing school dropout who started offing her patients in order to lighten her extreme workload on Pavilion 5, Ward D of Lane's General Hospital, otherwise known as the Death Ward. And it's where essentially all these end-stage, very comorbid people would go to receive care. And as a reminder, this place is critically, chronically understaffed. And the LNAs and ancillary staff are being asked to do things that are way outside their scope of practice, like handle medications and do treatments, dressing changes, things like that. So just right off the bat, they're being, you know, thrown to the wolves, essentially. And the first patient killed by Waltraud was killed with an overdose of Rohypnol. And that is widely known as the date rape drug, and it's not actually legal in the U.S., but she soon started employing other methods and recruited her teammates to help her. And soon all four women were involved in these acts and committing them independently as well as in a whole group doing them together. And we'll get deeper into that. Now, it was initially spun as a way for them to be like noble, right? And like, we're doing the honorable thing here. We're relieving suffering. And that's how Waltraud kind of sucked everybody into her circle. She was just like, listen, these people are laying here suffering. There's no point in prolonging their lives. Let's end their lives for them. Just, you know, it makes things easier for us and it relieves their suffering, right? Which, I mean, and that's what kind of sucked the ladies in. And not to mention the fact that they were all kind of desperate in their own ways to alleviate their workload a little bit, make their lives a little bit less stressful. So they took the bait and they also started killing people. And again, it just like really floors me how these people find each other, you know? So it ended up turning from like this noble, you know, act of, you know, mercy. Then it started evolving into like a, this person annoys me, so they're going to get on the list. So it's like the people that rang their call light too much, people that snored too loudly, like literally people
the
that snored too loudly.
Quote unquote.
Exactly. Anybody who provided any sort of like inconvenience to these ladies wound up getting what Waltraud called a ticket to God, which is like you end up on her list, her termination list.
Could you just imagine like being in the hallway of like where you and I used to work and just being like, nah, your turn.
No.
You're annoying.
I genuinely
no.
Cannot understand this way of thinking. And that's, I think, you know, why we're in the industry that we're in and why I you know, am in this industry, because I actually love this population. I love that I love giving care to people like in the twilight years and towards the end of their lives, because, you know, I've met some of the coolest people that I've met have been in that population. You know what
Absolutely.
I mean?
Absolutely.
And I actually, you know, really genuinely love it. So now the list, this termination list that Waltraud kept, it like grew and grew. And on average, these LNAs were usually taking the opportunity to kill at least one or two patients every 1 to 2 weeks. So it would, over time, it would average about a patient a week that they would kill. They did take care not to get too overwhelming with their kills because the death rate on the unit is high, but also they didn't want to skew the metrics enough to like raise any sort of suspicion. So they were, at least initially, they were like really kind of trying at least to keep it somewhat on the down low.
Trying is a choice word.
Trying is a choice word. And they did this for years. Years passed like this. Now, as we explored in part one, Valtraud immensely enjoyed the feeling it gave her when she killed people. And with that first kill, when she killed that person by herself, giving her an overdose of Rohypnol, she got this like rush of adrenaline and she found herself sort of like chasing that initial feeling more and more and more with every kill. And every time she killed, it's like she was getting desensitized to it. Like it would give her less satisfaction every time she would do it. It was sort of like getting high, or at least what I would imagine getting high is like, where like that, from what I hear, at least, like you get that first high and it's like nothing else, and then you can never achieve it again. And then every time you get high, you're trying to get that
you're
same feeling.
That first one.
Right. Exactly. So that's sort of like at least how I'm thinking of it in my mind. And she started figuring out that she was getting bored with their usual method of killing people, which was to give them overdoses of Rohypnol or morphine or insulin. Those were their big things that they would do. And the LNAs, again, all had access, like ready access to all these medicines. So it was very easy for them. And they just found that it got, at least Valtraud found that it got boring because it was so easy and nobody was questioning them. Nobody, she was never looking over her shoulder and she got really comfortable, like scary comfortable doing this. And it started to bore her and it was losing its magic. So in order to get that feeling back that she was chasing, Valtraud decided she was going to trial a new method of murdering patients. And this idea that she had would require some teamwork. So trigger warning, because this is somewhat graphic and it's upsetting. And remember, these are elderly, infirmed, frail, chronically ill, very dependent human beings. Okay. So in the mid to late 80s, she recruited her cohorts to work with her on a murder to trial this new idea. One of them would be tasked with pinching the patient's nose. Another would be holding down the patient's tongue, like either with fingers or a tongue depressor. And the third would pour water down the patient's throat until they essentially drowned or died of water poisoning.
No.
One or the other. Yeah, I swear to God. Like literally. So in other words, Valtraud felt the need to incite more fear and suffering in her patients as they died. So any semblance of her wanting to relieve suffering, like that's out the fucking window. Okay?
No, because like, she added to it. Like it's
because
similar
this
to, like, waterboarding.
Is torture.
Yeah.
This is waterboarding. This is literally this is straight up torture. No ifs, ands, or buts. So I cannot imagine finding out my loved one died like this. Like, I cannot imagine for the families what it must have been like to find out that my loved one died like this. So with, and like, imagine, like, you're told that your mom was murdered by three or four LNAs standing over here, working together and systemically drowning someone in their bed. Like, that's literally what is going on here.
Like this whole thing has been pretty, unimaginable to me, you know what I mean? As far as like even to try to like put yourself in their space, right? And how they make their decisions. Mm-hmm. But so now I'm just describing each individual, the three of like around this person, right? And so it's mm-hmm. like a 3-on-1, like here we are going to murder. And I just, it's absolutely insane.
This is insane. Like the,
and now I'm thinking of like the people that I've taken care of, and this is the night shift, and mm-hmm. I've gone into rooms before on the night shift, and like, you know, to even like bring them to the bathroom, check them, yeah. you know, give them mm-hmm. medication, whatever sure. it is that I'm needing to do, and they're so easily startled, right? Because sometimes
oh
they're asleep, or sometimes
how
they're
horrifying.
Awake, laying there, paranoid because they see a shadow coming into their room,
yes.
right? And
yes.
just like it's the middle of the night. And so to have three people come and hold you down like that and do that, man, like nightmares.
And these people are not like wealthy, like not like healthy, well adults. Like these
no.
people cannot defend themselves. Can't, some of them can't even speak, can't even argue, can't raise a hand to bat someone away. Like this is somebody, these are people that are so infirm that they are completely dependent. Like I'm
appalled.
the pathology here, I cannot even wrap my head around like where this, like how much of a horrible human being.
I mean, I've kind of obviously gotten used to like the stories that we do where someone has overdosed them, given them drugs and they've passed away, you know, and things like that.
Okay, another, you know.
Yep. Yeah. But like, I mean, this physical type of abuse to murder someone like that,
it's really bad. It's really bad. It's shocking. It's like very shocking. And I feel like there must be some shit about Valtroud that we don't know, because like, how does one go from, you know, and I know that a lot of it is, you know, maybe there's nature versus nurture, that debate sort of thing. But like, it seems like she grew up in like a stable home and she was exposed to caregiving at a young age. She was caring for her infirmed grandmother and she goes into healthcare voluntarily because she's genuinely interested in it. And then all of a sudden, it's like a switch flips and she's okay doing this.
She should have left healthcare the minute that switch started to just like creep up.
The minute. Oh, yeah. But I mean, I feel like I would institutionalize myself if I ever had like ideations of homicide.
So,
I mean,
I'm sure you're going to get to this, but like, what is the role in this for the fourth person?
So basically it's like, and then somebody is watching. Somebody's always like watching.
So that fourth person is like the watcher. Because didn't you say in part one that there was like somebody that was not on the night shift? And so like, or were they all?
All four of them worked on the night shift together.
Okay.
There was one lady, the older lady, who did not come into the picture until a little bit later.
Oh, all right.
So, but they all worked together for the most part when they did their drowning murders. And they did this more than once. They did this to a lot of people, which is just heartbreaking.
How do you get from...
That's what I'm saying.
Giving someone a date rate drug, you know what I mean, to...
How do you even
Here's my next idea. Like,
yeah, I mean, how do you even make that jump? Because it's like, it's almost like euthanasia, right? Which is not right by any means doing what they were doing. I mean, that's murder. Any way you slice it, that's murder. But it's going from, you know, a death that you could argue is probably somewhat painless and, you know, maybe not, just, although I don't know for sure, but like, I, you know, maybe somewhat painless and maybe somewhat, you know, dignified, even you could even say, to this, which is like straight up torture, because you want a thrill, because you need a thrill so bad that there's no other way for you to get that feeling other than to incite horror and fear and pain and suffering in your defenseless patient. I could go on like this forever, so I'm going to stop myself. But it fucking chaps me, man. That's so crazy. This is an evil person. Uh-huh. Very evil. So, and then they would do this, you know, and it's estimated that this method of killing would take anywhere from 5 minutes to 30 minutes, depending on the patient's status. So, somebody who... you know, is, you know, more on the frail side or medically fragile or maybe has some existing respiratory issues, it might not take as long, unfortunately. And then, like, the people that maybe are a little bit less infirmed and, you know, are a little bit stronger, it might take longer if they don't suffocate and swallow all the water and they died of water poisoning. And it's insane.
That's horrifying.
And they would work to clean the patient up and make it look like they just quietly died in their bed when they were actually like waterboarded to death.
That's horrifying.
So,
I'm going to assume, and I never want to assume, but I'm going to, because of the type of ward that it is, there were no autopsies?
Pretty much no autopsies, no, because all of these people had very poor prognosis.
Like in water and, you know, like...
Right. Well, and here's the thing with that, because medically speaking, there's a lot of health conditions that can cause an accumulation of fluid within the lungs, right? So like heart failure, renal failure, liver failure, all of which can be common in this population. So at any point, even if there was an autopsy finding that there was fluid in the lungs, it may not have really come as a big surprise to any person that was doing that. And it could have potentially even been explained by their comorbidities. So, I mean, it's hard to say for sure, but I mean, it's felt, I feel like, you know, that even if they did do an autopsy, it wouldn't necessarily be a very surprising finding for them. It's crazy. And then the LNAs would later go on to say that this method of killing would create a whole new level of excitement. So they were looking for that rush of adrenaline and they fucking got it. That ticked the box for them because it was more of a challenge and it was more of a fight. And it was, you know, finally they had a way to like really work out their aggression and their resentment towards these patients, because I feel like that's the root of all of this, is that they resented having to be there because they resented this population as a whole. And they felt like, I shouldn't be here because you shouldn't be here. You shouldn't be here. You serve no purpose to society. You're infirmed. You're elderly. We're all just working to keep you alive for no reason. You should be dead so I don't have to do this anymore.
That is terrible. I can't even imagine.
But I feel like from what I'm reading and from what these LNAs are saying, that's what I get
from
this.
Yeah, I mean, I can see why that we're at that conclusion for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So after about 5 years of working together, they had accumulated approximately 50 victims, at least. And by 1988, as they entered their sixth year, murmurings did start to emerge about the volume of murders increasing. And it wasn't by much, but it was enough to be noticeable. And nothing about the deaths themselves were shocking, like from a clinical standpoint, but it was starting to be noticed along the floor staff, and there started to be conversations had about how, you know, have you noticed how many people have died lately? I just feel like it seems a little unusual. I don't know. And for the most part, that culture of silence was really on the coven's side, right? Because mostly no one said anything. I mean, this continued for years, even though that there were murmurings, you know, this continued for a while. So
keep the peace was the
exactly
what we talked about it before.
Exactly. So now, until a fellow LNA who worked the day shift expressed some concerns to a physician there. Now, not much happened internally as a response. So that LNA actually went straight to the police and made a report.
Good for her.
Her concerns were that, yes, these people are comorbid, and yes, they are likely nearing the end of their lives, but she was starting to notice that a number of these people had been fine. Like, I took care of them the day before, and more often than not, these people are fine. Upright, talking, eating, drinking. There's no noticeable decline. And yes, sudden cardiopulmonary arrest can happen. It does happen. It happens a lot. But the vast majority of the time, if someone is dying, especially if it's someone who's elderly and comorbid, there's a little bit of a process to that. A lot of the time, right? There's a transition period. There's a noticeable decline. Even if it's for 12 hours, you know, even if it's for a few hours, there's a change. Usually there's a change. But it started occurring to this one LNA that she's noticing a lot of these people are fine. And then she comes back in the next day and they died overnight mysteriously. And it's always at night. Why is it always at night? You know? So for her, it's like, I don't have proof, but something's weird. We need to look into it. We need to look into it. And the hospital's not doing anything. So I'm going to go to the police now. So she goes to the police. She made that report. So she was super, super brave for doing that, for speaking her mind for sure. And for raising that concern. So now, again, an outside entity gets involved. So they start going towards the hospital and approaching them and asking for information. Immediately, administrators and the chief medical officer at Lane's stonewalled the police and refused to allow them to investigate anything. I actually didn't know that you could just say, no, thank you, I'll pass on this.
Did you just hear me? I'm like, what?
I was like, did I read that correctly? They just said no. And the police were like, well, shucks. Oh, man. Okay.
Wow.
I guess we'll just go home now. I don't know. I'm sure there was more to it than that. But this is just like what I'm gathering is that I didn't know that you could just be like, no, nah, not today.
I'm good.
I'm cool. But somehow they did that and it worked. And the police were just like, oh, shucks, oh well. And the investigation just sort of fizzled out at this point. Nothing came of it. Now, for anyone else, this might have made them lie low a little bit, right? Be like, okay, there was a probe. Somebody noticed something. I really got to scale back or stop what I'm doing or change jobs or something. But for the LNAs, it emboldened them, or at least it seemed to. They started feeling indestructible. They started getting a little reckless.
As you start getting cocky, that's when that shit happens.
And that's exactly what happened here. They absolutely let their guards down, and it seemed like, you know, oh, like now I feel like the police were involved and they still didn't catch us. Like they're never going to figure this out. Like that was what they were thinking, you know? So they felt a little indestructible at the moment. In February of 1989, the four women went to a pub near the hospital after their shift ended for a few drinks. And the LNAs started discussing the events of their shift a little bit too loudly. And the most memorable moments of the day, of course, was a murder that they had committed earlier together of another patient, an elderly woman named Julia Dronel. And they'd allegedly killed as many as 22 more patients by this time. Between the time that initial report was made and nothing came of it,
This
time in the pub, about 22 more people died. So they were on this power high. They didn't even bother being discreet. They said, fuck it. You know, we're just going to go get a little wasted and talk about this really loud in public, because they felt like they were never going to get caught at this point.
Wow.
But the women didn't realize that they were seated only a few feet away from a doctor who worked at Lane's General Hospital. Whoops.
That's how I feel about that.
Devin's hissing. So the doctor is literally sitting by them, just listening to these four crazy people cackling about. So they literally are describing in detail about holding this woman down and pouring water. Pouring water down her throat, and they laughed. He would later testify that they laughed about the expression that was on her face.
No.
They laughed at this woman. These people are fucking monsters. They're stupid and they're monsters. They're awful. These people are the worst. And he had heard enough. So he quickly leaves the pub and he fucking walks into the police station and he told them everything that they said. He was like, I cannot believe that I just fucking heard what I heard, but you guys are going to hear it too. So after what the doctor overheard, you know, this inadvertent confession to murder, the internal pressure from the doctor facilitated administration allowing police some access to medical records. So finally, the police re-enter this building, right? And because that doctor had overheard that and was advocating for the police, they had to allow the investigation to actually happen.
Well, so, imagine that.
So they all start pouring through medical records and everything else they needed to build their case and do an investigation. The police spent months gathering evidence, pouring through medical records of suspicious deaths in Ward D. And of course, they had to go through countless medical records and reviewing all of these deaths. I mean, this was another massive undertaking. They had to interview all the staff. They had to build all these timelines to support their theories of the women that were involved, right? And then on April 7th of 1989, the police arrested all four women at work, and they were brought down to the police station.
Good.
So the four accused murderers were split up, which is a great strategy, right? Because you got to separate them as soon as you can so that if there's any difference in their story, they can be like, aha, something's not matching up. Who's lying? We got to sniff out who's lying.
Yep.
So they separated everybody and interviewed them independently. And the investigators had the statement by the doctor, but much of their evidence outside of that, again, is so circumstantial. And to convict the women, what they needed were, if they didn't have eyewitness statements, what they needed were confessions. So The police confronted each woman with the names and pictures of patients who died under their care over the past 6 years. And after a few days of questioning, the women, one by one, did start to confess. So Stefania Meyer was actually the one that started to crack first. She gave the police a description of what they had referred to as the water cure. The water cure is what they called it.
That is not a cure.
When they drowned people is what they called it, the water cure. She started describing that to the police. And then Mariah Gruber and Irene Liedolf also confessed to killing patients with injections of Rohypnol and morphine. And all three of them pointed to Valtraud Wagner as their ringleader. And they said, this is the lady who roped us into this and convinced us to do this. When faced with the confessions of the others, Wagner didn't really even try to claim innocence. She was like, well, I guess I'm fucked. So she sat down, she took her time, and she very calmly admitted to everything that she had done.
Oh, shit.
The police presented Wagner with a list of all patient deaths in Ward D over the previous 2 years and asked her to identify which of these deaths were you. We need you to tell us which of these deaths over the past several years were you.
Oh,
and
man.
Wagner was quick to identify 39 patients, 39, as her
wow.
victims. And in each case, Wagner was allegedly able to recount the exact method she used on every single
no.
patient by name. She said, this one I injected with
that
morphine.
That just goes to show you how sick she is because
yeah,
she's
keeping
remembering
a,
the detail.
She's keeping a fucking mental catalog for this. I swear to God. So investigators were startled by Wagner because her memory was very precise. I mean, she gave dates off the top of her head, dates, times, exact milligrams, exact amounts of solution,
wow.
exact everything that she used. And they were struck by her demeanor because she was just talking about this like she was having coffee with a friend.
Right.
Like she was discussing literature and art. She was having a conversation like me and you are right now. Like it was emotionless. It was remorseless. It was casual. And it was like...
Can't.
How, like, she was talking about murdering fucking dozens of people, mowing down dozens of human beings. And they're all, like, just sitting there like, are you fucking kidding me, lady? Like, this is this is shocking and appalling.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just deadpan. And when they asked why she kept killing over and over again, she shrugged. She shrugged. And she said, quote, it just became habit.
I'm sorry. What?
Yep, that is what she said.
So she's addicted.
She was addicted. I thought you were just going to say, so she's a dick. I thought you were just going to leave it at that.
She's
that
addicted.
Too.
She's a dicky, addicted, seductive,
sadistic? Is
sadistic?
That what we're looking?
That's what I wanted. That's what I was going for.
You're fucking adorable and I love
yep.
you.
That's her right now.
That is her. So... When asked why she killed so many of her own patients, Wagner candidly replied that the ones who had gotten on her nerves were given a free bed with the good Lord.
Oh, dear.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So nice. One of the investigators asked Wagner, how do you remember everything in so much detail? She winks at him. The fucking gall. She winks at this guy. And replied, you'd remember something like this, too.
Stop.
She, the pathologist, like I said, I'm at a loss. This lady is something else. She is a whole nother fucking species. I don't even get it. I don't even get it. This is crazy.
Yeah.
The news of the arrests and subsequent confessions sparked a massive outrage all across Austria. And then Lane's General Hospital faced obvious, intense scrutiny. The supervisor of Pavilion 5, Ward D, who had prevented the investigation the first year, was suspended days after the arrests. The police blamed Lane's General Hospital for putting up a wall of silence that prevented a full investigation back in 1988. And if that investigation had been allowed to continue by the hospital administration, it could have saved 22 lives because there were 22 people that in the interim had ended up dead. So if they had actually been able to do their job, that could have been prevented, right? So when investigators looked into Ward D, they found numerous red flags that the hospital had ignored. The death rates did spike, and it was enough to be noticeable. Up to 5 or 6 times the normal rate when Voltraud Wagner was working shifts, and nobody made that connection. And she did this for years, that so many people died on her watch that and nobody noticed. 5 or 6 times the normal rate if you look percentage-wise. Wagner's floor also administered nearly 2,500 ampules of the drug Rohypnol between 1983 and 1987.
2,500?
2,500. And the normal usage is less than 300. Like the usage,
my gosh,
should have been around 300. Like if you're looking at like yearly averages, mm-hmm, unit to unit, and what it was, what the rate was before her time there, it was... astronomical, and nobody saw this. Nobody noticed this. Nobody put it together. The true number of murders committed remains a mystery to this day. I mean, she admitted to what she admitted to, but who knows? She could have fucking forgotten something. And then how would we know? You know what I mean? They initially confessed to killing a combined 49 people, but it's suspected by some that the real death toll could be as high as 300. The trial of Voltraud Wagner and the other three aides began in 1991. It was one of the highest profile trials in the history of modern Austria. And given the confessions, the only real question was, how many had they murdered and who was the most responsible? Because we had confessions.
Voltraud.
So the focus obviously was mostly on her. And the other three aides quickly jumped to blaming Wagner for pressuring them into murder, using her domineering and intimidating personality. And Stefania Meyer actually had added that Wagner's nickname on Ward D was the witch. I think you're all fucking witches, okay? Wagner tried fighting back, accusing the others of being just as involved in the killings as she was, and it sounds like they had their own involvement. I mean, they were helping you drown people.
I mean, one of them was holding the tongue down with a depressor, so...
And somebody else was holding a nose. So, I mean, she didn't do this all by herself, guys. Nobody held a gun to your head. You could have reported this at literally any time, and you did not.
Yep.
So here you are. I feel no empathy towards you whatsoever. So, and she ended up, Wagner ended up hitting back at Meyer, testifying that Meyer appeared to be enjoying holding down the patients as they died. Wagner also withdrew her initial confession, taking responsibility for only 9 deaths rather than the initial 39 that she had confessed to. But it was a little bit too late to change everybody's mind because her image as the evil mastermind behind all of this was sticking throughout their trial. And at the trial, each of the nurse's aides defended themselves with the same argument. They were motivated by mercy. They claimed that each of their victims were suffering and they simply provided the ultimate form of comfort by murdering them.
Oh, shit.
Sure, by literal torture. Like, waterboarding is an existing torture method for a reason. You're drowning people. Like, you assholes, shut up. Ugh. Side note. Unlike it was in the 80s, so passive euthanasia is actually legal in Austria today, although under very strict regulations and only allowed under certain circumstances. And passive euthanasia refers to stopping treatments necessary to keep people alive. So it would be like taking somebody off the ventilator. That's stuff that we do here in the US too, you know? If somebody has a very poor prognosis and they're being kept alive on a ventilator, you withdraw the ventilator and that person dies. And that is a form of passive euthanasia. And that is, of course, legal. And this actually, like, there was no form of euthanasia, just so everyone is clear, that was legal in Austria at the time that these LNAs did this. Some countries in Europe do have forms of euthanasia, elective euthanasia, and active euthanasia that are legal. but not Austria and definitely not in the 80s. So these four LNAs also certainly weren't withholding any treatments to stop their patients suffering. They were actively ending lives with medications and their stupid water cure that they are
It's not a cure.
Using. It's not no cure.
It's abuse.
And these murders were not in any way ethical or defensible acts, and their claims of mercy killings did not convince the court, thankfully. And Waltraud Wagner was convicted of 15 murders and sentenced to life in prison. And Irene Liedolf was convicted of 5 murders. She received life in prison. Stefania Meyer successfully convinced the court that she was intimidated by Wagner and was convicted of lesser charges, accessory to attempted murder and manslaughter. She caught 20 years. So it's still a hefty sentence. Not enough. Wow. Definitely not enough.
No.
And then Maria Gruber, judged less harshly due to her young age when the crimes began, was ultimately sentenced to 15 years in prison. And in the Austrian justice system, a sentence of life in prison doesn't really mean what it claims. So after 15 years, if the courts determine that the prisoner poses no danger to others, they can be released on parole. We have systems like that in the U.S. as well. And because of that rule, Maria Gruber and Stefania Meyer were released in 2003, after 12 years in prison, Waltraud Wagner and Irene Liedolf were both released in prison and released in 2008 after just under 18 years. So the release of those four nurses' aides caused widespread anger all through Austria. Many questioned the wisdom of, you know, a judicial system that would, you know, release literal mass murderers. These women are mass murderers back into society after just serving like a fraction of their sentence. And this can be an issue in the United States as well. Judges can put stipulations on prison sentences that they will or will not be eligible for parole in the U.S. So, like, for example, somebody can get life without the possibility of parole, and then they just get life, and then they don't see the outside. But it seems at that time that that's not the case in Austria. So the nurses' aides say it ironically benefited them from a merciful Austrian justice system on a very basic level. And this is another case that just, you know, illustrates the problems associated with hospital overcrowding, poor staffing, and terrible supervision and terrible accountability.
And deflection
is right.
Deflection.
If the hospital had had some more staff, some more resources to mitigate that immense stress brought on by their working conditions, they may not have been burnt out to the point that they fucking lost their minds and started doing this to people. Who knows? Yes and no. I mean, they're clearly got to be a certain type
Voltrub
of person to
clearly,
do this.
Yeah, she was like had a predisposed condition.
I feel like she had a syndrome. Like there was a syndrome there. And I mean, I do feel like a lot of it was resentment for years of being on the grind. Like, I get that. But there was something else in there. Like, there was some other driving thing. There was some other pathology in there that we just don't understand. You know, maybe if there were better conditions, this wouldn't have happened. It's really hard to say. Although, if working conditions weren't as taxing, you know, their behavior was still inexcusable. I'm not saying it's because of the working conditions. This illustrates how the coven lost all sense of right and wrong when they were in this extreme environment, and how flawed the healthcare system was at that time, and like really kind of enabled their activity, unfortunately. After their release from prison, all four women were given new identities by the Austrian government, allowing them to live quiet and honorable lives today somewhere off in Austria. So they're just out there living their best lives. Someone's neighbor, someone's wife, someone's mom.
That's terrible.
That's really scary, actually.
And do their neighbors know who they are?
I have no idea. Probably not.
Probably not.
Because Austria literally hates these women. But I feel like they also, I
they're
mean, this
not
happened that long ago. They are not alone. So does the U.S., okay? We all hate the women. We all hate them. So that is that on that. That is the story of the coven of Angels of Death in Lane's General Hospital in Austria.
And they were covens named by us. We named yeah. them covens. Nobody else.
We did
else.
That. Go listen to part one. We did that.
Yep. Mm-hmm. For sure.
Yar.
Well, thank you for listening, everybody. If you want to keep listening to us, you can check us out on Facebook at Med Crimes Podcast.
You can find us on YouTube by searching Med Crimes Podcast.
You can check us out on Instagram at Med Crimes Podcast.
If you wish to become a Patreon, you can find us at www.patreon.com/medcrimespodcast.
You could send us your crazy stories, ideas, topics, or say hi at medcrimes@gmail.com.
Stay safe out there. Don't form a coven of murderers, please. Like, just if you get real burnt out, just like take a minute. Just take a beat. Just talk to someone.
Take a
you
breath.
Know? Take a breath. Maybe change careers. Like, you don't have to work in medicine. It's okay. You can leave the bedside. You know, you can do other things. Go do hair. You know, go mow lawns. Go do something
literally
else. Whatever
anything
makes
else.
You happy. You
just
know,
don't be with humans.
Just don't be with humans. Go do something else. You know,
do anything else.
We won't judge you. We love you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.